Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please. And find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to The Pop Life Podcast, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast. Today is May the 18th?
Yes.
Oh, shit. I nailed it.
Yep. Right.
Next weekend is Memorial Day. Can you believe
that? Next weekend is Memorial Day, son.
Wait, is it next weekend or weekend
no,
after?
It's I think next it's next weekend. It's absolutely it's, next weekend.
That's insane.
It's next Monday.
That's crazy.
Yeah, man.
Yep.
So it's official. Summer kicks off official next weekend. So, bro, when the cookout, bro?
Yeah, you know, I'll let y'all know. You know.
Oh, yeah, let us know. We need to bring some ice.
plates. I got you know. Some cups. Some
I got you some cups or some, you know.
I'll bring some plasticware.
Yeah, some plasticware. Some give me some extra red cups and some ice. And
Get the big red cups now.
Get the big red cups and get two bags of ice just in case. how's everybody been doing this week, though?
Good.
This has been a weird week, and I can't really say it. I'm just going to say it's been a weird week. I can't really put it into words, but that's all I'm going to say about that.
This was a real crazy week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm here in Atlanta. I got here Wednesday. Yeah, Wednesday. Wednesday. And I'm here till tomorrow. I'm going to Houston for a night. And I'm supposed to come home Sunday, but I might U-turn it and come back to Atlanta for a day or two and come back to New York early next week. But I'll let y'all know.
All right.
But the weather's been decent down here. It's definitely warm. No jackets needed, shorts.
Yeah, it's been back and forth here. We had you left on Wednesday?
Yeah, Wednesday, yeah.
Wednesday.
It was pouring rain on Wednesday.
Yeah, so it started pouring rain on Wednesday. It was raining all day Thursday. It was full out like jeans and a jacket weather. And I think it's going to stay pretty cool and actually going to be raining again for the first half of next week.
Yeah, because you got a hoodie on. Shit.
Yeah, it's cool. It's chilly in my house.
Damn. Oh, by the way, I gotta give a. I guess it's a shout out to my old barber Herb. Because I left Herb, man. I went over to a new barber, man. I ain't even had the guts to tell Herb, man. I just ain't been back over there, man.
That's awful.
It is awful. I got a new barber in Atlanta. I can't even remember bro's name. I didn't remember his name.
Bibby? That nigga going to Bibby. That nigga going to Bibby.
Oh, shit.
A new barber in Atlanta, Jeff?
Atlanta. Yeah, I mean, I'm dying so much. I need to be able to get a cut. So I got a new barber in Atlanta. I can't remember bro's name, but he's in a different part. He's on off Cascade. You know, it's a younger shop. It's, you know, so I'm happy with it right now. I'm happy with my new barber. I can't remember bro's name, but I'm happy with him. So, okay. Peace to old Herb for all the good times and the old stories about hunting and fishing. shit. Y'all got any shout-outs before we get into it?
Shout-out to, this is messy. I'm sorry, Mama. Shout-out to my daddy's second wife.
Okay, we going here.
Well, nobody had a relationship with her. Nobody knew how to reach her. I haven't seen her since they were dating, and we were still living in Alabama when they got married. They weren't together and married very long. They were only together and married for like a summer, even though they were married legally for a while. I haven't seen her since they were dating. I would not know this woman if she walked up to me on the street, but apparently she's been calling around, trying to find out some info. I think she's been looking for his death certificate and can't find it.
You think she got a insurance policy she's trying to cash?
No, I think she's trying to see if she can get some of his Social Security benefits as an ex-wife.
Mm.
Because she called my grandmother's church, which is where we have my father's memorial service. And because it was a memorial and we had it downstairs instead of upstairs in the sanctuary. They didn't have a record of it, but she's been asking who handled the body. So my guess is she's been looking for his death certificate and can't find it in public records because she doesn't know where he died. So she's trying to figure out who the mortuary service was so she can be nosy. So Bertha, shout out to you. Her name is Bertha.
Bertha.
Miss Bertha. Oh my God.
Shout out to you. Miss Bertha. Because if you call, because my mama had to talk me down because I was about to look her up and call her my goddamn self. Like, I heard she was looking for some information. My mother was like, do not call that woman. So, Miss Bertha, please don't end up on my phone because it's going to be a whole nother conversation.
But I mean, what Miss Bertha going to do? She need to get that death certificate. What she could.
For what? She'll be all right. Listen, if you ain't been involved enough for any of us to know how to contact you to tell you the man was dead,
yeah.
You're all right. Like, you really are. They've been divorced. First of all, like I said, they were only together. Like, this was before Cheyenne's mom. So they were only together, like I said, for like a summer. And this was the summer immediately after my parents got divorced. I was like 4 or 5. And although she used the name Cochran for years and years and years and years, so I knew she was going to pop up at some point. But we don't even know her. Even my dad's sister was like, I wouldn't know if she walked up to me on the street. Like, we don't even know her. So yeah, she'd be all right.
All right, Miss Bertha. Good luck with it. Good luck with it. God bless you, Miss Bertha. You sound like you got a hard row to hoe.
She got a hard row to hoe because she is. I'm sure she's looking at Hawaii and I'm sure she's looking at Alabama, and he ain't dying neither of those places. So good luck, Bertha.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Good luck, Bertha.
All right. So let's jump on into it. We'll do a little TV first. Last week we had two finales. We'll start with the furthest one, which was the Atlanta season finale, which was last Thursday night.
It was alright. Sorry, go ahead.
I know, but I ain't gonna ask bro what he thought about it.
You might be surprised. I thought it was one of the better episodes.
Really good, actually. You know, because Earn really wrapped up a lot of loose ends that kind of had been hanging all throughout the kind of like the past couple. And it was also some full circle moments in there. So he wrapped up getting rid of Clay County's manager. He wrapped up kind of getting back on a good space with Van.
Nah.
But he was trying to get rid of Clay County.
Yeah, bro.
Yeah. Yeah,
he was trying to get rid of Clay County.
He was definitely trying to get rid of Clay County, but you know, Clay County's a savage with a smile on his face.
Clay County about that life.
Yeah. The more I watch Clay County's character move, the more I'm convinced that it's Nick Cannon. Cause that's really Nick. Nick is
Word?
Like, Nick is like a smile on his face, nice guy, and he's a fucking animal.
Oh, wow.
On the low, like with everything. He's a savage. You know, he's like a hardcore businessman. You know, he done bagged all the chicks. Like, he's really about that serious.
But Nick doesn't strike me as a dirty dude. Clay County is a dirty dude. Like, remember, he was ready to fuck that engineer up.
Yeah, he ended up getting the engineer fucked up by his boys.
That's what I'm saying. Nick doesn't strike me as that kind of guy. Yeah. Nick doesn't strike me as the kind of guy. Like, I don't feel like Nick is going to find a gun in his bag and stick it in Blue's bag in the fucking airport. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't see that.
Maybe not now.
Okay. I don't see that happening.
Maybe not now. Maybe not to Blue. So he wrapped that up. He got rid of Tracy.
Conveniently. You know what, though? Wait, can I interject? Did we have a discussion about the fact that they were moving to a new crib? Like, where did that even come from?
They never talked about it.
Okay.
Until the last episode, it wasn't known previously.
Yeah, because they just walked in and niggas was picking up boxes. I was confused.
And I feel like there's one more thing that he kind of read. He got Paperboy, the Jewish lawyer that he wanted.
What Jewish lawyer?
Remember when they went to the passport place and he was talking to
them? He said the
guy was saying his cousin was a lawyer. And remember,
we assume that
he ended up using the
No. Paperboy got in touch with a lawyer that Clay County's manager got him. Remember when they got to the airport?
Guy.
No. when they got to the airport, Clay County's manager dapped Paperboy up and was like, and Paperboy was like, yeah, good looking. I talked to that lawyer or whatever, something like that. So he ended up going with somebody that Clay County's manager got.
Okay. I thought it was
Which again may earn like this nigga here. But one thing that is left very much unraveled is Van said she's moving back to her mom's house. Now, I don't know if that means somewhere outside of Atlanta. I don't know what that means in terms of her and Earn's relationship, but that seemed to really bother Earn when he got that message.
Yeah. Yeah, there might be some issues between him and her family, whatever. I guess maybe next season we'll see. And also it was a couple of full circle moments, like they ended up for one scene back on the couch.
Yeah.
On the couch outside, which they hadn't done since, I think, season one. And when they were walking through the airport, Earn walked past the guys that be selling the shit.
Yeah, he used to work there.
Exactly. So, like, it was just kind of like a lot of, like, slick ways they tied it up. But, like, nah, why didn't you like it that much?
I'm not saying I didn't like it that much. I just said it was all right. I mean, it was a better episode than I feel the past few have been. And it seemed like Earn was finally kind of getting back on balance again, like you said, which I appreciated. But I guess I felt like it didn't write the season for me, because I just felt like there were too many other things that happened during the season that just weren't necessary. But it tied up the season in a decent way. But like I said, I did not like it. I just think it was all right. I think maybe I wanted a couple of more episodes in the season, because the Teddy Perkins joint, the middle school joint, there were a couple of joints in there where I'm like, yeah, we really didn't need that. I know they were great. I know they were great and dope, like for art's sake, but I just feel like the narrative this season, like I said in the earlier show, when we were talking about it, part of the thing about Atlanta that we all became accustomed to in season one is the fact that it was not a congruent narrative. Mm. So you're either going to give me a bunch of episodes that skip around, or you're going to give me a storyline. Like, I need one or the other. Mixing in both and jostling me back and forth is not an enjoyable experience for me, if that makes sense.
No, it makes 100% sense. If there were more episodes that were along the lines of this finale episode, to me, it makes it a better show.
Right.
I think that it was just, this was definitely one of the better episodes. I kind of like that. I didn't like some of the things. Fan of Man's Ice is Colder.
Say it again. You froze for a sec.
I said, I've never been a fan of the White Man's Ice is Colder.
Right.
And that's kind of...
Oh, with the lawyer thing?
Yeah. That was definitely the message.
Yeah, and I never really got the vibe that was...
Wait, Sean, you're freezing off and on. Kind of scene. You're freezing off and on a little bit, just so you know.
All right.
But what I would say is, one of the reasons I couldn't really enjoy the episode the way I wanted to is because I spent the entire episode waiting for Earn to get to TSA and have that gun in his back. I spent the entire episode waiting on that shit to happen. The entire episode, I was waiting on that to happen. But I was happy that he pulled himself out of it. But the entire episode, I was like, this nigga gonna fucking get arrested.
Yeah. What were you gonna say though, bro? About the lawyer?
I just thought that the lawyer was that whole thing was a little cheesy to me, and I just didn't really I didn't really get it. I didn't really understand it. I didn't think it was necessary. And there are plenty of qualified black attorneys in Atlanta. Like, it's not like they're in North Dakota, bro. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, so, but it is what it is. There were a few shots there. God bless them. But
definitely.
Yeah, well, I enjoyed it. I mean, I don't know, we probably won't get a season till 2020 or some shit. So, I don't know, but I enjoyed it. I saw that Insecure is coming back on August 12th.
Yay!
Yeah, so we got that coming, and Queen Sugar is coming on next, the I think right after Memorial Day. I think the Tuesday after Memorial Day. Yeah, the 28th or the 29th or something like that, like right after Memorial Day.
And Claws, which I can't remember if you guys ever got into
Claws. Yeah, yeah, Claws is dope.
Claws is coming back, I think, in June. I'm excited about that.
Yeah, it is June. I saw
that. That's a great show.
Yeah, it's a great show. Piece of Carucci for the come up. So it just turns over. We got more blackness to keep coming.
More blackness.
The other finale that I wanted to discuss was Blackish.
Yes.
They had the finale Tuesday past. I gotta say, in a weird way, I was a little disappointed.
Because they pulled it out, which was predictable. They did the predictable thing.
Yeah, they put a little bow on it, pardon the pun. They put a little bow on it at the end. Although, I mean, I'm happy that they stayed together. I didn't want to see them fail, but it just kind of wrapped up so neatly in 22 minutes. It was like,
like, they could have saved that till the first episode of next season, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. Like, if you really gonna do it, let's motherfucking do it.
This nigga Dre had bought a whole house.
A whole house. Two different sets of motherfucking furniture.
You know what I'm saying?
Like,
nah, nigga. We gonna talk about that. We gonna talk about that, nigga. Look, man.
I'm really mad at Kenya for that shit.
I ain't in their pockets. Okay. And they doing well. But my nigga, that lease on that house, I'm thinking, oh, this nigga got a little condo.
This nigga's in the hills.
This nigga's in the hills with skyline views and like 4,000 square feet, my nigga.
As an SVP of marketing.
Nigga. like I'm saying to myself, like, fam, like, dude, I was bugging. I was just like, honestly, because the show has been so realistic, it just felt ridiculously irresponsible. Right. Even for Dre, like, Dre will spend, buy the watches, buy the sneakers and all of that sort of shit. Right. But like, to lease a house, my nigga, like, that's not easy.
Right. Yeah, no. And both objections to the leasing of the house weren't about the cost. They were about the house itself, because it was like the glass house. But yeah, like, you're locked into a lease. That's why I said they should have at least stretched it out to next season, because I'm watching this shit like, nigga, how you got out of that lease? Like,
yeah, that's exactly.
He doesn't. Remember, he tells the dad, he's like, yo, Dre says it's 10 months on the lease.
Right.
Like,
so you gotta pay that double nut.
Nigga! Yo, I was like, I was dumbfounded at the sort of cavalierness and how they wrote that shit.
Yeah, right. I definitely thought, like you, bro, I definitely thought that he was gonna go get some little condo, downtown LA or some shit like that.
And nigga,
little two bedroom with the pool in the middle of the courtyard.
Because
I didn't think he was gonna have fucking, you said the glass shit with the stainless steel and the
nigga, that's like a $10,000 to $12,000 a month nut.
That's what I'm saying.
Just for rent.
Yeah. Also, how did you return that white couch after your daddy spilled food on it? I was also like, this is little shit that I was just like, but you know what? I'm not 100%. I need to go back and watch the episode, because I'm not 100% clear on whether he had moved all the way back into the house by the end, or what the time lapse was supposed to be, or whether they were just like back together and figuring it out.
I don't think they ever really said they never really showed them all back in the house. They just showed him and Bo doing a lot of stuff together.
They assume that they're back in the house, because remember, Ruby goes to the house at the end. So his mom and pops are in the house, because he's basically telling them, yo, y'all can have that spot because I can't get out the lease.
That
last little part. So pops is in the crib, and then Ruby shows up with the suitcase.
I totally missed that.
And then he's trying to like, yo, like, we got this crib. Like, what's really good, Ruby? Yo, and then he hits the fireplace.
Yes.
Yeah. And I mean, they definitely, I don't know if it was Kenya or any of his writers on the staff, whatever, but I felt like up to the point that we're talking about, that was definitely unrealistic. Like, so many of the subtle things that happen when a couple like that splits up, they really nailed, like the kids coming to the crib and like they want to go home and you know, it just like all that like
and little being shit. Like, nigga, you ain't got no towels.
You ain't got no utensils and we're sharing forks and you know what I'm saying? Like
all and, that shit. And also too, man, I understand that I have a bit of a different perspective because I've really been a primary caregiver, but like the trope of the sort of aimless dad who like
can't know to have shit out.
Come on, man. Like my nigga, you got hundreds of thousands of dollars of watches and sneakers. Right. I don't know anybody who has shit like that and don't have forks in the crib. Like, right, stop.
And you have five children. Like
come on, bro. Like, that trope is lazy. It's lazy as fuck.
Yeah.
Plus, when you live a certain quality of life, you're not eating with plastic shit.
Yeah.
Like, yourself. Like, personally, you gonna be like, nigga, you could've went to IKEA. Like, you could get forks and shit from Target, my nigga. Like, we ain't talking about
Walmart.
what are we doing here?
Amazon Prime. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But you know, but again, they wrapped it all up nice, because you know, for those who didn't watch, Rainbow's father passed away, and so she called Dre, you know, obviously in distress mode because she had just found out, and he comes over and you know sees her through the whole grieving process and everything, and that kind of reignites them getting back together and spending some quality time together and everything. It was very nice. It just kind of wrapped up so quickly after.
Yeah.
Because the beginning of the episode, it looked like, okay, they're not gonna be able to get back together.
Yeah, it looked like they were really finding, like, in the beginning of the episode seemed to be about the fact that they were actually finding a happy balance apart. And maybe the point was to say that they had to kind of relearn who they were apart for them to be able to work together.
Yeah.
But I'm just like, nigga, if you're gonna take us through all that drama, you might as well just hold it over till the beginning of next season, and then, because it, you're gonna go through all of that and then you're gonna wrap it up, like Jeff said, in a bow. To me, that takes away from all the realism you were giving us, because we all expected them to get back together anyway.
Yeah.
You know, look, I don't have any insights into their situation in terms of their business dealings, but I would wonder when they got that next season pickup, and if that next season pickup affected how they wrapped this up. Because this last season finale, it really ended on a high note, because I guess they were confirmed that they would be coming back for that next season. And I think they started to edge toward this sort of being a bit having a sense of finality.
Right.
And then they sort of switched directions, because they did about three episodes of real heaviness.
Yeah.
It was four.
Four episodes. Mm-hmm. So basically the last month they're going through it. And I think that there was a level of appreciation for this very sort of, you know, realistic thing. I mean, even though I didn't necessarily like it and enjoy it because it's not what I watched Black-ish for, there was an appreciation for it. And then for it to just be like they just woke up, snapped their fingers, and then they were all good. It was kind of like, wait a minute. I thought this was supposed to be like some sort of therapeutic, cathartic, mm-hmm. you know, process here. How did we just go from that to that? Like, how are we, you know, that's not realistic at all.
I mean, I do at least appreciate that when it finally did wrap up, it seemed like we were being told the story in retrospect. Like, this was apparent, like, the way they wrapped it up with them in the therapist's office, we were supposed to assume that some time had passed since all this had happened and they were retelling us the story. So, you know, we're not really clear on what that passage of time is, but it was made to look like, okay, now that we're on the other side of this, we're telling you the story of what happened. So I did kind of appreciate that, and the fact that they were still in therapy.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, said it is what it is at this point. It's done. I just kind of wish they would have, you know, kind of just took it all the way there. But, you know, hey, fine. You know, it wrapped up and God bless. And, you know, I was going to say earlier, I felt like to me that a lot of that might have been taken from some of Kenya's real life experiences. So if so, then, you know, I'm happy that him and his, you know, wife have, you know, figured it out as well. And, you know, I guess we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens next season, you know?
Right.
Let's talk a little bit about the Red Table show. Jada Pinkett mm-hmm. show.
I really, 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 really like this show.
Yeah, so it's episode 2. I don't know how many episodes they're doing, but it's episode 2. And it's the show is based is Jada Pinkett Smith, her mom, Adrian Young. I can't remember my mother's last name, forgive me. And her daughter Willow Smith. And they are kind of this, so it's three generations, and they're kind of sitting around a red table in the kitchen, and they're just kind of talking about, you know, different life experiences and different mm-hmm. things that are going on. And so this episode starts with Jada finding out that her longtime friend and hairdresser has literally just passed away of brain cancer. Jada says that she thought that she was in remission, but obviously she wasn't.
Right.
And then, so it's Jada dealing with the emotion of finding out her friend has died, and then breaking that news to her mom and to Willow. And then they, Jada, you know, being a trooper is like, just give me a few minutes, but we're still going to do the show.
Right.
So she sits down at the table and they start talking about, you know, just experiences, and Willow breaks it to both of them that.
Well, the show is about loss, right?
Yes.
And it was already going to be about loss. Which Jada says when she sits down, she's like, ironically, as we're about to have this show about loss, I literally just found out that my friend died. But they're asking each person, each one of them is recounting the biggest loss they've had. And Willow says that at one point she lost her sanity.
Yeah, lost herself.
No, which Jada says she lost herself. Willow says she lost her sanity.
Which was a trip, because at that point, Willow, the time frame that Willow's talking about losing her sanity
was right after Wet My Hair.
She was like 9 or 10.
Yeah,
years
she was
old.
Like 10 years old.
She's a child, you know, literally a child. And yeah, she talks about, you know, Wet My Hair, and she was just overwhelmed, and she made an album that I guess she never even put out.
She never finished it.
Never finished it, and she was just saying she started, like, you know, cutting herself because she kind of started getting swallowed up in the music business.
And she was in a really dark place, she said.
Exactly. Which is a trip as a 10-year-old. It's like, wow.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But you know, what's one of the things, and then the mom, the grandmother talks about the loss of her sister.
Yeah.
Who I just passed
away. But I feel like she said it was Jada's oldest sister. Did she say that? Did I misunderstand that?
I kept watching. I think it was, no, I was, because I watched it with a couple of friends.
Because I was like, is this Jada's father's daughter or something?
No, it was her. At first I thought it might have been it too, but it was actually her sister.
Oh, okay.
Because remember, she had Jada when she was in high school.
I know, that's why, so I was like, so I'm like, how is Jada's father older or something like that? I was trying to figure it out.
Yeah, exactly. Because if she'd have had a child before Jada, she'd have been like, you know, 10 years old.
Right.
So, it was her sister. And, you know, they say, so they're talking about their loss. I thought it was one of the things that's really interesting about the show is like how Jada interacts with Willow. And, you know, on paper, it might seem like kind of like it's kind of like weird or whatever, but in reality, it really works, because Jada really, and I'm sure Will is the same way, Jada really respects how her kids feel.
Yes.
And she doesn't be like, oh, you're too young for that. Oh, this is grown folk business.
And
you
their
know,
personhood.
Usual shit. Yeah, she really, like, when Willow says, because Willow's only 17 now, she's still a kid. And like, so when she talks, like, about stuff, and you know, Willow's definitely, like, you know, seems to be pretty mature for her age, but yet and still, she doesn't, like, even when she found out about Willow cutting herself, she wasn't like, oh my God! She was just like, wow, I didn't know that. That's really interesting that she went through that experience, you know, it's like, but it's just very interesting that their interaction is very, and I don't know, let me just finish this one point. And I don't see that interaction quite the same between Jada and her mom. Like, and it's not that Jada and her mom have a bad interaction. They seem to have a great relationship, but it still seems more mother and daughter-y. Whereas Jada's definitely the mom, but she just seems to like look at Willow as like this whole human being that, yeah, well, it's kind of interesting, you know?
I feel like Jada and her mom, it's weird. It seems like it's mother and daughter in position only, because they have said that they weren't that close, right? Whereas you can tell that Jada and Willow are very connected.
Yeah.
And Jada and her mom don't seem connected in the same way, if that makes sense. So it seems very like you can tell that you can tell that there are elements. I feel like I could tell that there are elements of their relationship that weren't established until Jada was grown. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And whereas you can tell that Jada and Willow,
because Jada said she was more raised by her grandmother. Yeah, right. Because her mom was so young.
Whereas with Jada and Willow, you can tell that there's a real closeness, and you don't necessarily feel that closeness between Jada and her mom. Mm. And I saw a lot of criticisms with people saying Jada was too calm when Willow said she had been cutting herself, with people being like, if my daughter said she had cut herself, I would have been like, oh my God, what? But that's the entire point. Like, Jada remained calm so that Willow could get this out. Right.
Yeah.
So that, and that in staying calm, Willow, she was able to hear Willow get all the way to the point where Willow says that she figured out herself that what she was doing was insane, really, kind of.
Yeah.
And stopped. And again, this is also 7 years ago. So, you know, there's a lot of Black parents, any parent, really, I shouldn't even say Black parents, that would have been like, oh my God, what do you mean? Why would you do that? Da, 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 da. But the point of the show is to very clearly let each generation have their voice.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate that. And I also got to say, I'm very impressed with Willow, because I also grew up in a family where there wasn't the whole, you too young for this conversation, stay out of grown folks' business. Like, I was encouraged to be part of conversations, but I don't know if I had the same self-awareness that Willow seems to exhibit. Like, she seems very self-possessed. And I don't know if I was there at 17. Mm. So you can tell, like you said, that her parents encourage their personhood and their individual identities and however they want to be. And a lot of people were also like, oh my God, how do you not know your kid is harming themselves? But there's a ton of parents that don't know what their kids go through. Like, that's not that unusual.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's actually pretty normal that you don't know.
Yeah.
Because if the kid is, you know, a lot of times the kid is doing it, and maybe, you know, they're covering it up with makeup, or they're wearing sleeves or anything.
Right. What do you think, Sean?
I enjoy the show a bit. I don't think that Jada's reaction was, I don't think it was normal for Black folks. That is right. Not a level of normalcy that we've grown up seeing. Actually, I don't even think that it's normal for white folks. I think that for the most part, parents would have been hysterical. It is vital for the lines of communication to stay open with your children, especially as they begin to grow into young adults and will be leaving the nest soon. The right. goal is for you to nurture and develop a relationship that gives them the ability to come to you with complete confidence that you are going to give them guidance versus judgment.
Yes.
Willow can clearly, she's an articulate young girl. She's very self-aware. She knows exactly what she is saying. She mm-hmm. has, you know, when you listen to her, you see a young girl that has processed this. She's thought about this. This is not fly by night. Yeah, you know, I would assume that their lifestyle is very insulated. I'm almost but positive that Willow does not have the same experiences at 9 and 10 that mm-hmm. many of us have had or have witnessed.
Right. Right?
Like your next door neighbor is fucking 3 miles away.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, this isn't really exactly how we grew up. There's a level of, you know, stardom, and there's a level of entitlement that I think that they have, that Jada has seemed to clearly try to balance. Like, mm-hmm. this is not going to be your life, right? Like, if you don't want it to be, right? Like, you guys get to do whatever you want to do. And listen, we've criticized, or at least questioned in some cases, maybe some of the freedoms that she's given. You know, one of the things that I always say as parents, and also when you are in relationships, that there's never a one size fit all. Especially exactly. with your children. Your children are different. Like, I have two children. They are completely different personalities. Mm-hmm. How I react to one at the same age is not how I would have reacted or am reacting to the other at that same age. The whole cutting herself thing is very, what I saw was a reaction to the, ain't no privacy in my house type of folks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. And yeah, you know, it's very hard to cut yourself, you know, and I don't want to sound crass here, but it's very hard to cut yourself when you're in a 700 square feet, two bedroom apartment.
With four brothers and sisters. With four,
yes.
And your grandmother in the bedroom, in the living room with the hospital bed.
Exactly. With the oxygen tank. But like when you're living in, you know, 15,000 square feet a house and you are entertainers, meaning you travel, you do not work 9 to 5s. You are gone for days at a time sometimes. Right. You know, it is very, that can happen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, listen, I'm indifferent to their parenting style. I've seen people praise it and I've seen people rag on it. I'm indifferent because that's what works for their children.
Exactly.
Jaden and Willow and those guys, they seem to be very well grounded. Okay. Ain't no, like, even with Trey. All right. No, there's no a TMZ report.
Yeah, nobody getting arrested.
Right.
Ain't nobody doing that. That boy
ain't going, no drug that, overdoses.
That's what I'm saying. That boy going on about his business, trying to figure out his life.
Yeah.
You know, Jaden, he'll do man. Stuff. Yeah. Jaden will do stuff. And you know what? It's weird. And guess what? If the world saw us when we were fucking 13 years old, they'd probably say we did some weird shit too.
Exactly.
So, I mean, God bless them. And I think it's very important. And I say this as the parent of a 15-year-old girl and one who is figuring out where she lies in, you know, the social circle of high school. I say that you have got to learn to be more receptive and be more open and have conversations with your children. They are smarter than you think. I know you think that they're not like complete, like they have thoughts, they have opinions, they have points of views. It would behoove you to learn that shit because especially at this age, if you don't really know who your kids are, if you're not allowing your kids to be themselves at 17, like honestly, like this is why a lot of you niggas end up 65 and don't nobody come check on you.
Yeah, right.
This is no, I'm dead serious.
Yeah.
This is why your aunt is 57, okay, and she got four kids and don't none of them come over and check on her, and she been fucking up her medication for 2 years, mm-hmm. and can't get no groceries in the house, and the roof is falling apart, okay, and the kids live a half hour away.
Yeah, and never come over there.
You know why? Because they got a fucked up relationship.
Yeah.
Because she was, there was this, and not to go off on a tangent, but there was one day on Twitter where somebody was talking about, a bunch of people were talking about their parents reading their diaries or like if they had journaled as kids and their parents going through their stuff, reading their journals, them getting in trouble for it, them ripping the journals up, them beating their ass for stuff they wrote. And I was horrified because, listen, I went through a real boundary pushing stage when I was in high school, but I kept a journal all through high school. And the one thing I can pretty confidently say is that my mother never read my shit. Like I was encouraged and it was respected that I had space to share my thoughts and get them out and have a place where I could vent and work through my own shit without intrusion. And I had a room and I did not have one of those mothers who came through and went through all the drawers in my room and went through my closet on some, this is my house shit. And I very much appreciate that. And it really bothers me that so many parents are of that. You can't even have your own thought in my house type mm-hmm. shit. And it's destructive. And as much as even we've been critical sometimes of not so much Willow, but definitely Jaden, cause that boy is strange sometimes. They clearly, the way they are growing up clearly works for them. Like they're clearly healthy and thriving and they have room to figure out who they are. And there's some privilege in that for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I respect it. I respect it because that is a thoughtful young woman sitting at that table.
Yeah, you know, very much
having
so.
Those conversations.
Very much so. Very much so. The show is very revealing. Just right, real quick, we're going to move on, but just finish up real quick. So they got into Tupac, passing away and how that affected Jada and how she's still very angry about just the whole situation. You know, mad at him, mad at everybody just around it, just mad. She doesn't, you know, she still seems to be really working through that one, you know.
Yeah.
Just not happy with it.
And I thought it was interesting that her and her mother both said that Pac was about to start making some changes in his life at the time that happened. And that, so they never got a chance to see the fullness of who he was going to be. I think that's very interesting because that's one of the things that has bothered me about all these posthumous Pac releases and everything, is that it freezes him in such a space and time.
Yeah, thug-like. Like, he was thug-like.
Yeah, and that's like just forever and ever. And I've always felt that that was really unfair to his legacy. And they just kind of confirmed that for me, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, you know, we suggest, you know, watch this on Facebook. Comes on once a week. I don't know what
Tuesdays.
Is it Tuesdays? Okay.
Yeah.
But obviously, you don't catch it on Tuesday. You could catch it another, you know, any day of the week. But it's a good show. It's really well produced. And I see it eventually probably, you know, if she wants to, maybe picked up on, you know, network television. No, I don't know. Maybe she'll just ride this Facebook model out. I don't know.
Yeah, I got to imagine they gave her a gang of money.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And it's produced. Like, there's cameras. It's like a real, it's, you know, it's in her house, but it's produced. It ain't on the iPhone, you know, so it's
right.
Some money. Nah, do you really want to, mention real quick this, the move documentary?
Sorry, I was on mute.
On mute.
So last weekend was the anniversary of,
was it 32 years, I think?
I think it might have been 33.
Okay.
So I think this was 85. So yeah, it was like the 33rd anniversary of the Move bombing. And the Move was a kind of pro-black, I don't even want to say black nationalist because it went so far beyond that.
Yeah.
It was a pro-black, I guess you would say, activist organization in Philly. It's hard to really.
It's a naturalist. I think it was labeled as a naturalist organization.
Okay.
Run by a guy named John Africa.
It's hard to, the thing about Move that is hard to, it's hard to classify what Move was. And somebody was suggesting that, this is why the narrative about Move isn't carried on in the same way we hear about some other things that have happened in this country, because they weren't quite the Black Panthers. They weren't quite Black Lives Matter, and they weren't a movement that a whole lot of people could get behind, right? Like, even Black people weren't fucking with Move, because like Sean just said, they were a naturalist movement. So it was about, life was life across the board. Like, in the first area of Philadelphia where they were in, they tore up all the concrete around the house. Mm-hmm. They had livestock in the yard. The kids were interacting with the livestock, kids running around naked.
And by
kids
the way, this
eating
is
raw
in
food.
The city.
This is in the city of Philadelphia.
Philadelphia, yeah. Right. Out in the country somewhere.
So people started complaining because from a municipal standpoint, they were fucking up the neighborhood. Then they moved into a Black working class neighborhood, which is where they were during the bombing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the same thing. You know, it was unsanitary. They did, they were anti technology. So I don't think they had running water. They didn't use power, or they used selective power. They didn't watch TV. The kids didn't have toys. And like I said, the kids would be running around, no clothes on, completely naked, hair just all out, whatever. Even within the house, they would rip up the floors. And in this house, and I think this is what's important, because even I didn't really understand this until I watched the documentary. First of all, I didn't know about Move until maybe 3 years ago, which is crazy. And a lot of people, even people who are younger, who were babies when it happened or who were born after it happened, don't really know about it. It's not a story that the national collective knows about on a real level. And this was 1985, not 1964, not 1972. But what happened is, to jump to the end and then come back to the beginning, the Philadelphia Police Department, in a standoff with the Move organization, dropped a bomb on this house. that ended up, when all was said and done, burning down about three blocks, destroying an entire community.
And they watched it burn. They prevented the fire department from going in.
So from the outside, this looks like, you know, systematic tearing down. This looks like, you know, COINTELPRO or the FBI, you know, staging the murder of Black Panther leaders or something like that. But when you get into it, it's really more complex than that, right? Because the MOVE organization had declared, the one place in which they took up arms was in declaration against the police. They had had shootouts with the police before. It was alleged that they had actually killed a cop, even though MOVE still maintains that the cop was killed by friendly fire. Mm-hmm. So basically, people in the neighborhood have been calling everybody like, yo, you got to get these people the fuck out of here because they had taken the house.
The people in the neighborhood are Black people.
This is Black working class people.
Yeah.
And they had taken this one house, they had barricaded it up, and on the roof, they had built these bunkers all the way up, like monstrosities, all the way up on the roof that allowed them to have sight for blocks around. And John Africa himself would get up in the bunker on a megaphone in the evening and just talk shit to the neighborhood. Like, y'all are sheep. What the fuck? Yeah. Y'all don't even understand the revolution. What the fuck is going on? So, you know, you got your kids outside double dutching and shit, playing stickball. And you got this person on a megaphone cussing the whole neighborhood out
And he would do it deep into the night, 2, 3, 4 in the morning. So people couldn't sleep. Like, right. It was crazy. It was craziness.
And also, like I said, there were a lot of unsanitary conditions. Like, they basically didn't live in any state of modern convenience. So the neighbors were basically like, y'all got to get them the fuck out of here. And of course, the police definitely did have their own issues with MOVE. So on the day of March, on May 13th, there was a stand. They told the neighbors on May 12th, the police did, like, y'all going to need to evacuate for approximately 24 hours. And on the morning of May 13th, they started a standoff against MOVE. And it started with tear bombing that took up almost the whole block. Then they took a water cannon. They were trying to knock off this bunker at the top of the building because it gave MOVE an advantage over the police in terms of height and line of sight. So then they had a water cannon shooting at the bunker all day. Then there was firefight exchanged. Then it got quiet for a minute and they were regrouping. And what they wanted from MOVE was a physical surrender. They wanted them to physically come out of that house so they could evict them from the house. And that wasn't happening. MOVE was holding.
But they also didn't want to come out of the house because they knew if they came out of the house,
they were going to get killed.
It was about picking them off. Exactly.
Right.
Because earlier, previously there was an episode where one of the MOVE guys came out the house and the cops like beat the shit out of him, like,
right,
you know, in public. Everybody saw it, and of course none of the cops got in trouble,
right?
And came to court to show in the documentary and blatantly lied about what happened. And the cops got in no trouble. Meanwhile, this MOVE cat got the shit kicked out of him and went to jail.
Right, and the same police that were involved in that kicking were on site on this day. So basically they regroup at some time in the afternoon and someone from the bomb squad suggests that they drop a bomb on the roof of the house, which they do. The problem wasn't, and they dropped 4 pounds of C4 or something crazy like that. They had already exchanged like 10,000 rounds of ammunition. Like, it was like the numbers of the force was crazy. So they dropped the C4 on the roof. The problem wasn't the bomb. The problem was that after the bomb, a fire started. Now, the mayor, who at the time was Black.
Yeah, who went to Morgan, actually.
Yeah, says that.
Wasn't good.
Says that he was watching the news. At first, he thought that the fire was being contained. He thought he saw water hitting the building, but he later realized it was snow on the TV, which I don't know how realistic that is. But he says that he gave an order after a point to contain the fire. The police chief says he received the order. Well, the police chief says he received the order and passed it on to the fire chief. The fire chief says he never got that order.
Yeah, so somebody's lying.
So somebody's lying. And basically what happened was there was a point at some point that the call was made to let the fire burn. And that's the name of the documentary, is Let the Fire Burn. It was that fire that is the problem, because there was some point at the day where everybody was like, fuck it, we taking this whole shit out, with no thought of collateral damage. And by the time that fire kept spreading and it was too large to contain. When it was all said and done and everything calmed down, three blocks, like literally three city blocks.
And these are obviously working, these are working class homes.
Yeah.
People who like lost these people, like, I mean, taking the move thing out of it for just a second, like these people lost everything. Like
they
lost their, their furniture, lost their belongings, and there was other people who died. And it was, you know, and again, the fire department just sat there and watched
and was like, whatever.
Three blocks go up in flames. It's incredible.
And I don't think there was ever a point at any point where they tried to, even when it started spreading towards other houses and other blocks, there was never a point where they tried to contain it. And I guess there came a point where they were like, it's impossible to do. And then the other part that left the police department and the fire department open for scrutiny was that there was a point at which finally some of the people in the building did try to surrender. And to your point, Jeff, as people started coming out, they started shooting at them. So folks actually turned around and went back
inside. Ran back inside, exactly.
Which is crazy, right?
Yeah. So it was, I mean, the interesting thing about the dock, one of the interesting things about the dock was that they had a lot of court footage of John Africa's sister and
another mother,
woman,
I think.
And they were like kind of going back and forth with the councilman and lawyers and stuff like that, and more than holding their own.
The hearings were to find out whether or not the police department and the fire department were negligent on that day, which they were found to be negligent, but there was no one actually punished for it.
Exactly. And they were more than holding their own, and they were like very, you know, very sharp, and they were very like aware of law. And, you know, obviously they just had also just kind of like smart common sense. But it is interesting that once you kind of leave the Philadelphia area, like that whole thing is totally pretty much forgotten about.
Yeah.
Nobody really knows about it. Nobody really, there's no things to commemorated. A couple of the people are still in jail. A lot of them are dead now. Some of them have just kind of, you know, went back to normal life.
Well, there were only two survivors that day.
Yeah,
the little boy, who is now dead.
Yeah, he died later. He was a truck driver and ended up dying later.
Yeah, he died later. And one of the women went to jail and came out. And like you said, there's still some MOVE members who've been in jail since like 78 or something like that.
Did you see it, bro?
Yeah, I watched it. I watched it a while back. I felt sort of the same way. I mean, I thought it was really interesting. I mean, it's kind of crazy because it was a time when you were alive, right? And so.
Right.
It's weird because actually Kelly, friend to the show and friend in real life,
who's from Philly,
KMGZ, who's from Philly, like she has in one of her podcasts, she actually talks about it and literally talks about when they dropped the bomb and how it like shook like three blocks. And
her dad had a store on the block, I think, on the corner or something.
Yeah, near there. It was so she talked about it very vividly. I mean, it was just, it was just very interesting, man. It was really sort of watching these sort of respectable middle-class black folks who probably mostly fled from the South, who kind of felt like they had, you know, they were getting their piece of the pie and they were, you know, getting their land and moving up in the world. And then they had these sort of, you know, the naked kids and the guys, you know, talking all night from the speakers and just the wildness that was going on. So yeah, just listening to those, you know, sorts of stories were really interesting. But I mean, it's exactly what we talk about all the time. I mean, this is a, you know, massive force. You know, the militarization of police is nothing new. I'm pretty sure that a lot of those guys who were involved in this were guys who had literally just come back from Vietnam. I'm almost sure of it. Mm-hmm. And they had a very harsh mentality about how they were going to deal with anyone that was seen as an enemy. There were reports that there was return fire. I don't really know how or what to believe, that there were tunnels and they were sort of moving into different houses on the block and all sorts of other shit. And I mean, listen, at the end of the day, we know that there are better ways now to handle that. You know, it didn't happen then. A lot of folks lost their home, and not just lost their home, but really didn't They lost like big portions of wealth, man, because when the city went to pay them, they were paid cents on the dollar.
Yeah,
they
weren't paid on the dollar. Yep.
Yeah. They weren't paid, you know, regular value. So, you know, again, there's another instance, right? Like very much like Tulsa, there's another instance of state sanctioned violence in which the end result and either the intended or the unintended consequence is Black folks, you know, ultimately losing their wealth.
Yeah.
Right. And also the city as part of, I was about to say reparations, but that's not right. But as part of like an atonement for what happened was ordered to build new housing there, but the housing was condemned like 20 years later because it was so shoddy.
Yeah, they built it shitty. They just threw it up, you know.
Yeah,
because a lot of the policies and a lot of the things that we see, like the things that we see now in public spaces, these are not things that are new. These are things that have been implemented and put in place for decades. And what they do is, instead of hitting a home run, instead of hitting a grand slam, they just hit singles and they bunt and they move the runner. And then you look up and it's 12 years later and you wonder why are they tearing that down now? And then you next thing you know, oh, you know, the rent is expensive or you know, there's a land grab here or this is being built or that's being built or, you know, all of those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and so I mean, I wonder what I got to ask Kelly. I wonder if that area is now gentrified.
I heard it's just now being someone else from Philly told me it's just not even flipped, but just now starting to be revitalized.
Wow!
It still hadn't come back. I guess from whenever they condemned that housing, which would have been the early 2000s, or mid 2000s, it still hasn't come back from that.
Yeah. Okay. Yes, I also want to mention that. Also want to mention peace and prayers to her, Hawaii.
Word.
This island in Hawaii is basically, I don't know how you pronounce this, Kilauea, I believe. Kilauea is, pretty much, breaking up and exploding. A volcano erupted, it shot ash 30,000 feet in the air. That's crazy. That's like
as high
as planes. You know what I'm saying? Like up in the air, there's 5 miles high. Apparently there's boulders the size of like cars, falling out the sky. There's lava just blasting through neighborhoods. And of course there's no way to stop this. It's nature.
Right.
It is what it is, So, people are still there. They're trying to hang on. A lot of the, people who, have been living there forever escaped to Hawaii from wherever they come from. Like this paradise is this part of the paradise is falling apart, literally falling apart. And there's nothing to really do to stop it. It just kind of is what it is. I feel like every morning I'm gonna wake up and hear about this part of Hawaii just basically cracking in two and falling into the ocean,
Right.
I just wanted to, kind of say, shout out to them. A lot of them are there. They're just like, hey, it's gonna be all right. It ain't bothering us. Like,
nah, it's crazy. Okay. I saw a satellite view. Somebody did a satellite picture showing a neighborhood like before and after the lava ran through. It's crazy.
Crazy. Yeah, it's like it's lava.
It's fucking lava.
Like it's
you can't stop lava. You can't build nothing against lava.
Nope.
It's lava. Like you can't do nothing.
2100 Fahrenheit. 2100 degrees Fahrenheit. So
insane.
Yeah. Should we give a light shout out to Prince Harry
and
Meghan Markle?
And Meghan Markle. Tonight, tomorrow. What I want to do is send prayers to Meghan because her family is trying it. The white side of her family.
Exactly. The black side. The black side is all we all together. They like
right.
Are you coming there, Irma?
Right.
Coming in late.
Her half sister, who she has had no relationship with her entire adult life, by all accounts, like since before. She was even on Suits. has apparently been trying to trade off of Megan's fame mm-hmm. since Megan became famous. So, and the minute Megan started dating Harry publicly, she's been, you know, talking to the press, trying to sell stories, do whatever. And now with the wedding coming up, she has just been a complete donkey about every fucking thing. So she's not invited. Nope. And I guess, and part of it is bitterness at not being invited, but it's also like, bitch, of course you're not invited because look how you act, right? Yeah. Like, she would be the one who, if she got invited, would be trying to like sell photos and shit
for the wedding
and do all that type of dumb shit.
She'd be selling photos to the wedding before the wedding was over.
Right. Like, she'd be doing a live, she'd be on Facebook Live from the wedding. She'd be that bitch.
Yeah.
So, most recently, she encouraged Megan's father to participate in some staged photos getting ready for the wedding. Like, he was reading a book on the British dynasty. He was getting measured for his suit. He was working out, like, doing some other stuff. And the allegation is that they sold these photos to the press for about $150,000. And wow. As a result, well, it depends on what you believe. Immediately after that, her father apparently had a heart attack.
Yeah, allegedly.
And he claims that that's the reason he now is not going to the wedding.
Mm-hmm.
Although a lot of people believe that he's not going out of embarrassment because he doesn't want to embarrass her.
And he probably also got that call from, I mean, people have to remember.
This is royalty.
The royal family is worth, I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think Queen Elizabeth is still the richest woman in the world.
I don't know, but I believe
something
it.
Something like that. And I know they have like the largest, I think, art collection in the world. And she has the biggest horse collection in the world. They got a lot of billions and billions and billions of dollars that they've had for years. They can make one phone call and shit get hot for you. So I think it was also them making a call like, hey, bruh. We think it'll be best for you not to come to this.
But the other thing is, like, not only that, but what people have to remember, like, I had gotten into an argument with this girl. She was like, well, why not just invite the family so that they wouldn't act out? And I'm like, why am I inviting y'all and I don't fuck with y'all? But the other thing is, like, this is a state event, right? This is not you and your boo getting married down at the First Baptist Church. This is an actual, like, it's the monarchy. Like, it's not... I don't even think Meghan and Harry have final say over some very high level details of the wedding because it's not a personal event. This is a British monarchy, you know, ceremonial event. And there's decorum and there's protocol and there's tradition and there's security measures and there's all kind of extra shit that we probably don't even think about. That goes into it. And like, no, I'm not inviting y'all. Cause for what? You know what I mean? It's just like, for what? Why would I? And, I respect whatever Megan has to do to keep her peace. Like, she hasn't addressed this shit one way or the other, which of course she's not, because why would she? Because she's now royalty. And I just really wish her happiness and that she's able to go on about her life, because it's clear, you know, the British press is awesome. The British press and the British tabloids, like, America ain't got shit on them. And they're clearly going to be all in her shit, like, from now until. So I just wish her well, and I wish her strength, because it's going to be a hard road. You know, it's going
to
be hard.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. Yeah. So peace to her and Harry. And, you know, she's once divorced. She's 36. She's half black. And so her marrying into this monarchy is a really big deal. And Prince Charles is now going to walk her down the aisle in the absence of her father. So that wedding takes place, comes on TV like 4 or 5 in the morning. And the
coverage, something ridiculous.
The coverage is, it's blanket coverage from now until.
I'm not waking up for that bullshit.
Yeah,
I'll see it.
A lot of motherfuckers are.
I know. I'm just stating that.
God bless them.
Lord. Want to mention, should we mention Aaron, how you say his name? Aaron Schlossenberg? Schlossenberg?
I mean, we lawyer. Can.
He's the lawyer who got caught on tape threatening to call ICE on a bunch of people, Latino people in a lunch spot called Freshco. Freshco, because they were speaking Spanish or making food, speaking Spanish to each other. were making food.
Or I think it was one of them was speaking Spanish to a customer or something like that.
Yeah, but whatever.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, they were speaking Spanish.
Back. It's like, so he jumps up and says, you know, you can't speak Spanish and this is my country. If you're going to speak Spanish, I'm going to call ICE. And he's, you know, tries to call ICE. It's come out that there's a couple other people have him.
And talking about, I pay for your welfare.
Yeah,
I pay for your...
yeah. But it's like welfare, they're working. Like, what are you talking about?
Right.
But there's also a couple people that have come out with videos since of him acting crazy to the street on them. And this is white people. He's going at other Jewish people. Like, he's obviously a dude that's, like, off his rocket.
Out of his mind.
So what's happening with some of these racists now is when they get caught on film, they immediately become kind of public fodder. And, like, the woman in Oakland is now a meme. that everybody's been just using and making, you know, mad jokes about.
Right.
And this Aaron guy is not a meme, but he's totally been outed. His law firm fired him, closed him down. And
the law firm didn't fire him. The building where they rent
office the building
space,
kicked him out of the office. Right. It's my fault. So, he's running from the New York Post and the Daily News, all the, you know, the press people that they're calling him on the street.
Literally booking down the street, sprinting down the street. And a couple of New York politicians, local representatives have filed complaints against him with the Bar Association.
Yeah. So he's about to lose his license.
But my problem with this is that, still, there are liberal folks on the web on fucking Al Gore's internet talking about, well, just because he's a terrible person doesn't mean we should harass him in the street. How would you feel if somebody treated you like that? He should have thought about how he would feel if somebody treated him the way he was treating them other people, because that's what the fuck is happening. And this devil's advocate, see the other side bullshit is why Trump is in office. Real fucking talk. Like,
okay, they say that, but it's like, yo, like, him calling ICE is literally... it starts the process of people like breaking up families.
Yeah, destroying lives.
Yeah, because he wants to call ICE on some people who are just working hard, getting up and being somewhere at 4 or 5 in the morning to cut a bunch of, you know, arugula and kale to make your punk ass salad. Like, I got no sympathy for this dude. What do you think about it, bro?
I mean, I don't have any sympathy for him. I do have a bit of an unpopular opinion with how the clip that I saw, how it was being presented. And I guess that would be like, you know, listen, I mean, he made the bed, he got to lay in it. I don't have no sympathy for him. I really don't give a fuck about him. If you want to call up the office and, you know, get him kicked out of his office, that's fair. You want to call and make, you know, statements about the bar exam, that's fair too. But saying that you guys are reporters and like blocking his way to move or blocking his way to run. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like the clip that I saw, they were a little aggressive to me, in my opinion.
Right.
Again, I think that there's fair game for a person like that. And I think that he should be ridiculed. He should be publicly shamed. He should absolutely have to handle all of that shit. But when I'm looking at that clip in its totality and these guys are acting like they're just air quotes here doing their job, like you guys were being a little aggressive here, guys. Like, let's not make it seem like, you know, you were just regular paparazzi. Like we've seen news people do this, and there's a certain level of respect and space that is always given.
Right.
And they didn't give that there. And that's fine. But if you don't want to give it, then you got to eat that shit too. Right. Yeah. But don't make it seem like, hey, we're just doing our job here, you know, because you're on the side of right. Like you're doing something that's disingenuous, even though you're on the side of right. And then you're trying to stand on that. Like, I got an unpopular opinion about that, but fuck him. He should be kicked out. He's using the shared office space. I don't know if you guys have, I don't know if you guys know, but in New York City, we have lots of.
Yeah, shared office.
Basically shared office spaces. Yeah. This is usually for lawyers, accountants, people with very, very small staffs, people who work by themselves, who are growing a business and, you know, you can't really meet at the Starbucks.
Right.
But you're definitely not trying to sign a 7-year lease on 2,000 square feet. So you get these sorts of easy spaces, but they are very communal. They're very communal. They're very communal spaces. I've had one of those spaces. And so, yes, I can understand why that guy would be a problem in that space.
He violated their code of community or something like that.
Yeah, I'm positive that's what it was. Also, they have the right to throw your ass out. If you're a fucking nuisance, news reporters hanging around and making it uncomfortable for other clients and other tenants is a fucking problem.
He probably also was a nuisance inside the office.
He probably been on thin ice. When people are assholes to that degree, that is not the first time they're being assholes.
Exactly.
That is not them blowing up. That is not him. Oh, you caught him on a bad day. No.
Yeah.
He was incredibly calm. He was incredibly clear, and he knew exactly what he was saying. He had practiced this shit before. He had said it in other settings. This was almost the culmination of the coming out party of a racist, right? Exactly. When they get to publicly display, like all of that other shit, it starts at the barbecue. And you've had a couple beers, and then you feel like you can kind of let a couple loose, and you heat checking.
Yep.
Right. You heat check to see if it and then you might do it at work and then you might do it at the country club. And then you grow until you don't have that filter anymore.
Yeah. Now you just out here. Wow.
And now you're showing your ass in Midtown Manhattan while you're being taped. Like there wasn't even a secret that he was being taped.
Yep.
Right.
Yep. So all of this, he seems like he's not a nice guy. No, he's not a nice guy. And you know how we know that? Because we watched him.
Yeah.
Like we literally watched him be a complete fucking douche.
Yeah. So fuck him. I agree. Fuck him. real quick. They claiming the flight MH370, the Malaysia flight that them aliens took. Now they claiming that the pilot had a murder suicide and he rode the plane past his home island, which is why it rolled past there. He wanted to take one last look at it, and then he dipped the plane and then rode into the ocean. I'm like, man, yo.
I take it that you don't believe that.
No, I believe that them peoples is up in the galaxies right now, getting probed and all kind of other shit.
And well, fighting Thanos? You think they fighting Stone, Jeffrey?
There ain't no Soul Stone, but they floating around and they seeing some shit that we ain't seen before. They speaking language telepathically and, you know, they see it in another part of the galaxy. That's all.
The only thing I want in life is to be at the nursing home. when this 85-year-old nigga start talking about that damn plane that them aliens took.
They took
it.
Mr. Sledge, if you don't sit down and eat your Jell-O cup, talking crazy, Mr. Sledge talking crazy again. Listen, I don't disagree that there's additional life out there. But yes, one of the things that they did say, and one of the reasons that their theory is, I guess, sort of holding up, was that there was a basically the theory was that he depressurized the cabin.
Right. Which knocked everybody out.
Mm-hmm. And that's why they said there wasn't even an attempt at people calling. Right. So there was no cell phone connection that you could get through a line, but there wasn't even an attempt. So people didn't even try to send text messages. Like every plane crash is sort of, that's basically sort of it. You know, 9/11, we know, you know what I mean? People left messages and people are calling and they're texting their loved ones. So with none of that happening and the fact that it would have probably had to, I mean, he would have had to do that also to the co-pilot, right? Like there was no way that the co-pilot and the crew would have allowed that to happen if they were conscious, right? That's the theory. Right. So, I mean, is it a fair theory? Sure. It's a hard sell when you can't find anything. However, I do want to remind people that the ocean is vast and it's unpredictable.
Yeah.
Like, I know we think we got all of this shit under control.
Oh, not at all.
But I was listening to a podcast, man. They found like a fucking untouched tribe in like 2012.
Yeah.
like a remote tribe, like living. Think about that shit, bro. You know how vast the jungle has to be. You know how vast and big and you know, the ocean is like, you know, it's unpredictable. I mean, they can guesstimate, and they usually are good, and they usually are good at sort of narrowing down where a plane would be. But I could totally believe that. But I can also totally believe why Jeff and Kelly think they with the aliens.
They with the aliens, man. They up yonder.
They're up yonder. They're going up yonder.
I want to just end the podcast with, I guess, peace and love to people's families, for the kids who were shot in Santa Fe, Texas today.
Yeah.
They of course, I tweeted as soon as I saw that the shooter was arrested and secured, I knew he wasn't black.
Right.
He's a white guy named Nicholas, Demetria something. Right. 17-year-old kid, killed as many as 10 people, just walked into school and started firing. It's kind of crazy. And, you know, of course, no word from the NRA. You know, nope. Trump said a little something, but, you know, it was light.
No, it was inappropriate as fuck.
Yeah, Trump was like, as always.
School shooting, not looking good. God bless everyone. Like, he is the worst. The worst.
Yeah.
I mean, peace to those families. My heart goes out to them. I haven't done a lot of research here, but definitely the last two shootings have been, young men with these sort of European-ish,
Russian
Russian names. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm starting to wonder if there's some sort of thing happening here. I'm not sure. You know, obviously, that's wild premature for me to just say flat out, but there's something here. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I want to find out. If this kid's adopted as well, then it's going to be like, okay, there's something going on. You know, they kind of like funneling some of this shit to the states, adoption or whatever.
On some sleeper cell shit?
Exactly. Because this is nuts. So, prayers to the families and their kids. It's going to be interesting as always, because, you know, this was in Texas, which is obviously an open carry state. Everybody in Texas has a gun, and it still happens. So all that shit about arming teachers, there's no way to stop it that way. It's just like, you know, come on, man. Like, it's deeper than rap. It's deeper than that. It's deeper than just arming a bunch of people and hoping you have a big shootout like on a movie, you know?
Right.
And again, they it's kind of wild to me that they got this kid. I'm looking at his mugshot right now. Ain't got a scar on his body. You know, like he's chilling. Like, wow, that's crazy. You know, but you know, walking while black gets arrested, Starbucks right. while black gets arrested. You know, and you know, doing Airbnb while black gets 7 cop cars to come out.
Exactly.
But this boy ain't got a marker on his body, and he done killed 10.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. So. Yeah, that's it. We're gonna wrap it up on that note.
Yep.
You know, happy weekend, everybody.
Word. Yeah.
And we'll see y'all next week.
Later. Peace.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got 3 ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter @poplifepodcast. Talk to you next week.